Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
The year 1910 was one of the most important years in the evolution of football rules, and if not the most significant in sports history. We have examined many of the revisions to the rule in the joint sessions of the intercollegiate and conference committees proposed and passed from that year in the past few editions of the series. And the two committees would sit together and be known as the American Intercollegiate Football Rules Committee. And this part of our series will conclude the revisions of 1910 and give you the reasons that necessitated change, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And in yesterday's episode, we started talking about our Football History Rewind part number 27 and started chatting about the great rules revisions of the 1910 season, prior to the 1910 season, which really opened up the offensive strategies in the game of football and made it more in line with what we're used to today. Well, today we're going to have a conclusion of that little talk that we had, because there are some more great rules that we just couldn't cover them all in one episode. So this is our second part. One change that we've really not touched upon very much was considered by some committee members as being too long overdue. Walter Camp and J.B. Fine of Princeton had been proposing the distance of the line to gain should be increased from 5 yards to 10 yards for years. Others, such as P.J. DeShiel of Navy, suggested distance should be increased to 8 yards. The recommendations from the previous years would be accepted in 1910 as the rule was revised to the offensive team earning a first down by advancing the ball 10 yards and having 3 downs to do so. Now, if the team in possession did not advance the ball 10 yards and 3 downs, then the opposition would gain possession of the ball at its position after the third down play was over. So this is really still played by this rule if you go to the Canadian Football League and Canadian football in general, the different levels of Canadian football. They have 3 downs to go 10 yards, and it really changes the whole dynamic of the game. You see more of a passing game in the CFL compared to the NFL has been more traditionally run-oriented, because you have an extra down to play with to try to get that hard yards with a run. Now, we know that the NFL and college game have gone a little bit more passing over the last couple decades, but traditionally we're talking, having that extra down helps you to allow to have the running game. Now, this extra 5 yards was needed to reach the line of game was significant, as it somewhat nullified the mass momentum and interlock blocking plays that have been practiced. Now, these plays generally only produced short gains, which were great when you had a distance of a mere 5 yards to conquer in 3 tries. It's much more daunting a challenge at hand to use the same plays to go twice that distance in the same amount of attempts. So, big factor there of eliminating those very rough formations. Now, the tackling techniques were tinkered with as well in the rash of rule revisions of 1910. Now, tackling a runner below the knees was illegal unless you were a defender positioned on the line of scrimmage. The terminals of this defensive line were the exceptions, though, as they were not allowed to hit a runner below the knees. The provision of this rule was that the defender who made his initial contact above the knees and then slipped to contact with the lower leg of the runner was acceptable and legal. Another rule that altered defensive play was that of piling on. Players of both sides were now not permitted to pile on a downed runner. Previous years have seen this as an accepted practice, especially by defenders, but the action had caused many injuries to the players. you think? This practice also caused a lot of ill will by the guys at the bottom of the pile to those who were jumping on top of the mass of humanity, as you can well imagine. So, you know, two very interesting rules, as many, you know, we talked about last time, all the different passing rules and interference and, you know, the forward pass rules. But this tackling rule, very interesting indeed. So what they're saying is only interior defensive linemen can tackle below the knees. The terminal ends, you know, the defensive ends or the outside linebackers, we would call them today, that would be on the line of scrimmage, well, they were not part of that exception. They had to tackle above the knees. So pretty interesting. Now, there were also some rules for runners. Up till now, the players who had possession of the ball had free rein to do just about anything they wanted. The rules makers decided to put some restrictions on the ball carriers as well to create a more level and fair playing field. Hurdling players was not permitted anymore without penalty. And a later provision in 1910 gave an exception to this rule, stating that a man on his knees or knees may be legally hurdled. So they're just talking about somebody standing on their feet. If you tried to jump over them, that would be hurdling. And in most cases, that is still a rule on the books, but we see it with such great athleticism in today's game that I don't think I've ever seen hurdling called, except for at the high school level. I've never seen it in college or pro, but I think it is still a rule. Now, the runner was allowed to place his hand on a teammate, but the runner could not grasp his teammate in an effort to be pulled along by him or push him into somebody. The new rules who could become a runner had changed too. The offensive guard carrying the ball as a runner was now illegal and would now be penalized 5 yards for such an action. The runner also would be penalized if he tried to extend his arms with the ball after the play had been declared dead. Well, that's kind of interesting. Runners had restrictions to when and where they could kick from, too. A kick from scrimmage was only legal if it were kicked from a point 5 yards or more behind the line of scrimmage. This all but ended the rugby-style practice of kicking a field goal while running downfield. So, very interesting. So, some things that have sort of regressed in our generation is, okay, runner gets tackled, he puts the ball forward with both hands. Well, that was illegal in 1910, according to rule. You know, also the rugby kick of getting the scrimmage kick for punt formation, and you're taking off running as a kicker, and you boot the ball as you're on the run. Well, that would have been illegal at that time. So interesting that things changed back to in our modern era to allow those. Now, the reasons for some change were many, and this plethora of changes can best be summed up by looking at the statistics of the 1909 season. There was a barrage of deaths even after the forward pass was incorporated in 1906, and serious injuries, especially at the defensive tackle position. The reason for this position being victimized was that the forward pass forced the defensive backs to play further downfield and not up with the tackles to take some of the burden off the run support. The steps to reduce these injuries were ridding the mass momentum plays by requiring 7 men on the line of scrimmage so that the big guys could not get a good head of steam before contacting defensive opponents. The line of game extension to 10 yards also assisted the riddance of the menace of the mass momentum blocking. To counter the loss of offensive firepower, the scales were balanced by easing restrictions on the forward pass. Now, the 1910 season, as a result of this, was extremely interesting. Defenses were starting to dominate. And as a matter of fact, the two teams that are considered the champions, I don't know, some circles say it's one or the other, some say they were co-champions, that's Harvard University and University of Pittsburgh, were both retroactively said to be national champs. Harvard had a stellar record of 8-0-1. Coach Percy Haughton coached the Crimson to their outstanding 1910 season with a scoreless tie in the final game of the season as their only blemish against Yale. Harvard did not have 1 point scored on them as they knocked off teams such as Brown, Army, Cornell, and Dartmouth. So, you know, they went undefeated except for a tie, scoreless tie with Yale, and had no points scored against them all year. It's telling you the defense got a definite advantage. Now, meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, Coach Joe Thompson led the Pitt 11 to a perfect 9-0 mark, and the Panthers did not have even 1 point scored on them, playing mostly home games against teams from Washington, Jefferson, Carnegie Tech, and Penn State, among others. Now, so that just shows you defense was ruling in 1910. Now at the pro level, it was the Shelby Blues football team that won the Ohio State title, an accomplishment in that era as being the top professional team. And we have a great three-part series on the Shelby football, and that 1910 Shelby team is one of those that we really talk about quite a bit. And it's a, you know, it's in our early pro football series. It was just about a month ago in early 2022 that we talked about Shelby, and we had a great time doing it. And it's very interesting. I think maybe you should check that out if you haven't already. And you know, some circles say that the Shelby Tigers were also with the part of the championship. And I'm not sure exactly their relationship to the Shelby Blues. I'll have to do a little bit more studying on that. I don't think they were a separate team. I think they might have played in conjunction with the Blues, and that's why they're included as the Tigers. But don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure. It takes a little bit more research. Now, the game was definitely taking form with all these 1910 revisions. And, you know, really the offense was, you know, becoming quite powerful, or getting stymied. I mean, their power was sort of taken away from them, even though they got the forward pass. But there's going to be some great innovators coming up, and some more rules changes, and some more tweaking to do. So please look back soon for part number 29 of the series, when our stories continue on a Football History Rewind as we go through football year by year and cover all the rules in the championship teams of each season. And we cover football history each and every day, so you don't have to wait for more football. Just tune back tomorrow, and we'll have some for you, that's for sure. You can also check out some more sports history on the sportshistorynetwork.com, where we have our podcast, this one, Pigskin Dispatch, and the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast, as well as our audio drama that we're a part of, Orville Mulligan Sports Writer, on there. So you can check those out at sportshistorynetwork.com. And also, you can see all my friends over there. We have about 27 different podcasts on there talking about all kinds of different sports from different eras of sports history with some excellent guests. And the podcast hosts are very good people, very knowledgeable, and I think you'll learn a lot on there. So make sure you check those out. Until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.